This is Dr. XH Balthazar. I am broadcasting once again to present my findings from the world of the uncanny. Several days ago, I received a correspondence from a friend of mine, Dr. Carmen Lane, with whom I went to school with and is now a psychiatrist at Blooming Rose Mental Hospital in West Virginia. She requested that I come to the facility at once to investigate peculiar similarities between several patients. Today, I will embark to the psychiatric facility. This is Dr. Balthazar. I am sitting now in the office of Dr. Lane. Doctor, your message seems rather urgent. What is it that I can help you with?
Well, Doctor, 2 months ago, the hospital received 3 new patients within the span of 2 weeks. 2 young men, Lucas, age 17, and John, 15, and a young lady named Sarah at the age of 16. Given the nature of their crimes, they were sentenced to the hospital. Upon arrival, all 3 of them were completely silent for weeks, not even so much as a murmur or a cough out of any of them. It was as if they weren't even there. They were like the undead. I tried everything, Doctor, truly, but the kids would not so much as eat or drink, much less speak. It was not until I attempted hypnotherapy.
Yes, I have heard of this.
By relaxing the patients into a trance-like state while simultaneously focusing their attention to my questions, I have been able to hear the stories and have noticed an unsettling pattern between the crimes they had committed.
And what crimes may these be?
I think it best you sit in on a hypnosis session and listen for yourself.
Would it be all right if I were to record these sessions, Doctor?
Please do. I think it is important that you capture these disturbing accounts. Hi, John. Welcome to your session. This is Dr. Balthazar, a colleague of mine, who will be overseeing the session with me. Can you say hello to him?
Hello.
Thank you. Please take a seat. Now, what I want you to do is close your eyes, and I want you to allow yourself to feel your body gradually relax. Listen to the sound of the clock as it makes you more and more relaxed. Sink deeper and deeper into relaxation. As you listen to my voice, you will begin to feel every muscle in your body settle into comfort. Now, you will answer these questions for me without hesitation. What is your name?
John McHale.
Sarah Keyway.
My name is Greg Akron.
And now you are picturing where you grew up.
Birmingham, Alabama.
Atlanta, Georgia.
Starkville, Mississippi.
You're not that little kid anymore. You're visiting your past. How old are you now?
I...
It feels so good to relax and let it all go, doesn't it, John? All you have to do is relax. How old are you?
I'm 16.
Very good. This is all reminding you of something. Perhaps Teddy?
Teddy.
Listen to my voice, John. How it follows you. You want to tell me about Teddy.
They never forgot about him. About Teddy. Mom and Dad. Never. But they would forget about me. All the time. I'd be in the background. And they knew it. They would laugh about it.
You are present in this moment, Sarah. And in this moment, how old are you?
I'm 15.
And you want to tell me about Paul, don't you?
Paul?
And how old is your sister, Greg?
Kelsey was 12.
You're finding you want to describe her to me.
That Teddy was so blessed in everything he did, like baseball. But that's because Dad would always take him out to throw the ball around. Sometimes I asked to play, but Dad said we didn't have enough baseball mitts. I let it go. Maybe we couldn't afford another mitt. But it wasn't until Mom told me a story about when I was just a baby that I really got my place in the family.
I may have been born into that family, but I wasn't in the picture. Not even for a second. But Paul was always in the picture. He never felt loss or pain because they kept him protected. But I felt all the pain for him. I felt how cold it was outside.
Kelsey got the big room when we moved into the new house. The room with the view of the mountains. The room without the tiny closet and dimensions with barely enough room to fit a bed. We argued for months about who would get the room, but my parents had already decided that the room with a view would be Kelsey's. Not only was she Little Miss Virtuoso who needed a room with the better acoustics, she was the younger one who would be staying longer in the house after I left for college. It was like I was already gone.
I didn't think of doing it until he came to see me.
Who?
It was one night.
I could hear breathing.
A man over me. He told me not to scream.
I'm not sure how he got in.
He was so tall.
He had a rake in his hands. He was covered in blood.
He assured me that he was a friend.
Told me that he also had a younger sibling that got all of the attention.
Said that when once they were gone,
he said it would be pure bliss.
Tell me what happened next.
So, one night, we're at the dinner table, and Mom's telling us this story about when we were babies. And Teddy's slurping up his supper that's bigger than mine. I checked. She tells us that one day in August, they wanted to take us to see a baseball game because Teddy, as a baby, would giggle every time Dad had it on the TV. I didn't like it much. They loaded us into our car carriers, brought Teddy in the car, and then Mom laughs as she remembers leaving me facing the fireplace in my car seat with my face burning.
The cold is biting at me because they made me wear a dress for the Christmas photos we took in front of the lake outside our home. Paul got to wear a suit that covered his arms from the snow. I'm saying how cold it is, but no one's listening. Just smile Just be as patient as your brother, or we'll take the photos without you.
It was my 17th birthday when we finally moved in. And on a day that's supposed to be about me, you would think, I walk into my room with its four small walls and tiny little closet and view of the street.
She forgot me. And they drove all the way to the game. So she finishes telling the story and Teddy's laughing along with them. The room's warm because there's a fire burning in the fireplace.
We took our last photo. My mom and dad go to look at the pictures. Paul looks so handsome. Paul isn't making a face. I was making a face because I couldn't feel my fingers. I asked to see the photo, and there's Dad standing in the middle, smiling at Mom on his right hip, who's holding Paul under her arm. And I'm to Dad's left, scowling with my hands on my own shoulders to keep me from shaking.
We had a Jack and Jill bathroom, so I could see Kelsey's room from my bed. And I could see for myself how much bigger the windows were, how much higher the ceilings were. That night, my birthday present is a ticket to Kelsey's recital. I didn't want to go.
What happened next?
I looked over at Teddy, sitting next to me, with his dish licked clean.
I told Paul I wanted a snowball fight. Dad said, "Oh, not so cold now, are you? After you ruined all our photos." They leave me and Paul outside alone, at the edge of the ice pond.
I knock on Kelsey's door. She lets me in, all dressed up and ready to be the center of attention. She tells me happy birthday again, but all I can see is the window open behind her.
And when Mom and Dad cleared off the table and go into to do dishes, I grab him by the hand and lead him to the fireplace.
Paul leans down to gather a snowball, and I grab his arms, force them behind him and tie his sleeves together. And I lean down and tie his shoes together quickly, as fast as I can.
I see her violin is propped up in the corner. I push past her, tell her to shut the door. Then I yank one of the strings off. And I tell her to walk toward me.
I grab his head between my hands and press his face forward until his face is getting engulfed by the flames. The white of his eyes started to burn. They were melting. He was screaming, begging me to let him up.
I pushed him into the freezing water and jumped in after him. I didn't care how cold it was. I mounted myself on his back and pushed his head underwater as hard as I could. His arms were flailing around him, trying so hard to escape, but he couldn't. I could feel his neck trying to open up and breathe.
When she's close enough, I grab her and wrap a violin string around her neck. The string was so sharp, but it didn't take much pressure for the string to slice her throat. She didn't even have time to scream. Blood began to pool, and then pour. A waterfall of her insides spilling out onto the floor.
You are relaxed. Now, tell me what you did next.
He told me to leave. Signature.
So that he would be blamed for the murders.
He would do that for us.
He understood us in a way no one else had.
Do you remember his name? That man with the blood and the rake.
Jim Sands.
Jim Sands.
Jim Sands. I carved the initials.
J.S.
The case that Dr. Lane presented to me is quite odd. Is it possible that the teens all happen to have the same delusion that they met Mr. Jim Sands? Who do you suppose this Jim Sands might be? To be safe, parents in neighboring towns should be wary of the name and should watch over their children closely. As always, listeners, thank you for tuning in, and until next time, goodbye and good night.